Everyone has a story to tell. What's yours? You're listening to Around the World with Dan Perry. Do you enjoy hearing tales of world adventure? Would you like travel advice from those who know the road well? Maybe you want to embark on a journey of your own, and you just need a bit of motivation to get started. You'll find all of that and more on Around the World with Dan Perry. Hello from incredible India. Katie and I got here a couple weeks ago. And the first thing we did when we got off the plane, as we do in every country, is fill out an immigration checklist, a form that just has our name and basic information, handed it over. At the top of this list, instead of just calling the country India, they called it Incredible India. Maybe a bit braggadocious, but so far I must agree, we've had a great time here in Incredible India, traveling around for about 2 weeks through the south of the country. And we're looking forward to a lot more travels here in Incredible India. And I'm looking forward to doing some more podcasts from here. But I have one last podcast for you from Sri Lanka. Katie and I, on our very last night in the country, we sat on our rooftop and just talked about what we thought of our month in Sri Lanka while it was still fresh on our minds. It was impromptu, and I think we got into a pretty interesting discussion. It's a long one, though, so I'm going to keep this introduction short today, and we'll just jump into my conversation with Katie about Sri Lanka. My arms right now are like covered in sweat. What time is it right now?
Like 8:30.
It's that late, huh?
7:30? I don't know.
It's definitely nighttime, and it's still just ridiculously hot. The temperature just doesn't even drop here.
Well, it's weird because you've been here for a month, and the last 2 days are the only days where I've felt so like more hot, like so hot enough that I'm uncomfortable.
Yeah.
You're hot for a while, and you're out walking around, like, put up the umbrella, you know, put on the sun hat, or riding a bike, and you get the wind, or whatever. But then you come back, and most places you just turn the fan on in your room, and not air conditioning, just the fan, and it's fine.
Right. But not here.
Like, when we were in Tithamahara in the south, it was like, the fan cooled us off just fine.
Right, even in the day, we could sit in that room with just a fan, and it was fine. I don't know, for some reason here, though, the fan's not enough. So to record this podcast, we have a few options for location. In our room is one, but we have to have the fans going, or we'll just die in there, because it's a sauna.
Super hot, and air conditioning's not working, so it's not possible to use air conditioning.
Right, I was going to mention that, too. A lot of places in Sri Lanka, you get one price for air conditioning and one price for a fan, and they're the same room sometimes. So there's basically a air conditioning unit on the wall, and the only way to turn it on is with a remote control. And so if you pay like 1,000 extra rupees, which is like $6 a night, they'll give you the remote control so you can use the air. And obviously that makes things just amazing. This was not an option for us here, though, because the air is broken. So
but most places we didn't even need that. Like
no,
most
not
places,
really.
The fan room was totally fine.
Right.
So you know, it is what it is. But I have to say, I am a little bit uncomfortably hot, and I've been sitting outside most of the day, trying to find a cooler place to be. But then the mosquitoes came out around like 3:30 or 4. And
yep.
Totally had a couple of them bug sprays. I don't want to get bit by mosquitoes. I don't want to get dengue.
And you showed me one. You killed a mosquito, showed it to me, and it's definitely an Anopheles mosquito, which is a mosquito that causes malaria and dengue. So that's not good. They do have some dengue here, and I've already had it once, and I don't want to get it again. It's worse if you get it a second time. So we're damned if we do, damned if you don't. Sitting in our room is just stifling right now. And
outside to record this. There's a lot of air conditioning units. I guess every other room has working air conditioning, and so that makes too much noise. We can't sit next to that. So yeah. We're on the roof, but the roof happens to be next to a road. And I've mentioned this before, but I swear, turning this recording device on makes the noise come. Like, it wasn't very loud when we came up here. And now, see?
Yeah.
As soon as you start recording, the trucks get louder. They start honking. Listen to that.
That was.
It's a train.
Oh, it's a train.
It's a train. That train wasn't. There weren't trains coming 10 minutes ago. I've been up here for half an hour and no trains. Okay, so now we're back to a reasonable volume. Anyway, we're going to talk about Sri Lanka. Don't worry, most of the things about Sri Lanka are good. This is just parts of the country are really hot.
So what you're saying, does this mean that you're ready to leave?
No, not really. I'd rather not be in this part of the country.
Mm.
If we had to stay in Sri Lanka another month, I'd be fine with that.
Yeah, same here.
It's been
awesome. Where would you spend more time if you had another month here? Where would you go?
I definitely, for now, would go up in the hills. So we spent like our first week or so up in the hill country. It's like a mile above sea level. It's not exactly cold there, but it's so much cooler than here. It's just pleasant. Like, the days are still warm, but at night, actually the locals, it's so funny. The locals put on winter hats at night and gloves.
That was pretty funny.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably like Fahrenheit, probably like in the 50s, but they're wearing winter hats. I don't know. I think I'd go up somewhere up there and tour around a little bit, maybe go to one of those parks. Or on the ocean, it's fine too. Because you've got a nice breeze.
Yeah,
The sea breeze makes all the difference. But here, there's just no wind at all. It's just still air. And it's really humid. There's a storm in the distance. And
I think that's probably what it is. The last two nights, there's been some lightning.
Yep.
And I think that's just making it a bit more stifling. And we're just not getting the sea breeze. We're really close to the ocean here. We're just not getting the wind that we maybe would get usually.
But we're a few miles away.
Oh, like, right there.
It is? Huh. I'll be damned. Shows you how much I've been walking around here. So let's talk about Sri Lanka.
All right, so.
What are some of the highlights for you?
I don't know, I think maybe we should. Sri Lanka is definitely a place you can categorize by regions. Mm. There's Colombo, there's the hill country, there's what they call the deep south.
That's funny.
The
Louisiana of Sri Lanka.
Yeah. The east and the north. Simple enough, right?
Sure.
I mean, obviously the west as well, but it's kind of like the west is like north of Colombo and then south of Colombo. It's kind of categorized that way, right?
Sure.
And we pretty much did most of the country except for the east.
Yeah, we've been here about a month, which, when we were coming here, we had to pick an end date, and we thought like a month might actually be a little too long. Like, we might get bored, but not at all.
Not like a Mongolia. It's
oh,
Sri Lanka,
right.
Is not that big.
No, it's tiny. But there's just a lot of stuff to do there. There's a lot packed into it.
Here's a few factors I think that you would have to consider. One, there's a lot to do. So you can pretty much kind of plan around your interest. Two, if you're on a budget, which we are, you can travel really slowly here or you can travel really fast here. And obviously that's true for a lot of places, but it's really true for here. And the price difference between doing that is probably pretty big. What I mean by that is, we've only taken two taxis in 1 month. One actual car taxi, and that was when we got him from the airport at like 11:30 at night. And the second time was on election day. We took a tuk-tuk taxi to a temple. And so even that's, you know, pretty reasonably priced.
The only reason we took that was because it was election day and there just weren't any buses running like there normally would be.
And it's pretty reasonably priced. It's not like it's ridiculously expensive. So you know. But for us, we're, you know, we just came from the Philippines, and we felt like we didn't do any walking there. It was difficult to walk around, and there wasn't a lot of shoulder in the road, and so much traffic. And so here we're like, you know, a bit less than 2 kilometers, we'll just walk there. And so we did mostly.
Yeah.
Or to the bus. And it took us a little bit of time to figure out the buses. And that's one of the beautiful things about traveling for a longer period of time is that was our first, you know, quote unquote, tourist attraction. Well, that first, you know, getting to Colombo was just asking the local for a bus to take.
That's true, yeah.
And the beautiful, beautiful thing about Sri Lanka is that because of the different people here, you know, the Tamil culture, the Sinhalese culture, English is almost kind of their common language, unless some of them speak both Tamil and Sinhalese.
Well, let's
and then
not,
also the colonialism.
Yeah, let's not forget that. That's why English is here.
In addition to the colonialism, there's those two factors.
Right.
Where English is spoken, most people here speak a little bit of English.
Yep.
And you can just go up and ask any local, like, hey, I want to go here. Like, which bus do I take? And they'll be like, they'll help you. And if they don't know, they'll ask the next person next to them at the bus stop. And so it's been pretty, you know, it's not like Japan or Taiwan where you can just go on Google and be like, Google, what bus do I take? Oh, it's a 917. Okay, I'm going to get on the 917 and I'm going to go 10 stops and I'm going to get off at this stop name. Like, that's not here. Like, there are, to us, like, there are no bus stop names. You just, like, flag the bus down and you catch it.
Well, yeah, except there are kind of stops.
There are kind of stops.
They do kind of have names anywhere.
I guess, but it's just not like, it's not organized on Google as it is in some countries.
Right, you can't rely on Google here for
So you
for
need
bus
to just do the ask the locals thing, which, of course, it's more difficult and a bit more time-consuming, but at the same time, dang, it's an open window into meeting the locals here. And if you do any one thing in Sri Lanka, if you come here, please, please give yourself some time to be present and meet the locals, because they are such a gem. And honestly, I say this with a full heart and so much gratitude that we've taken the time and that these people have opened their hearts to us. It's just been really nice. It's really made my trip here.
Yeah, same here. The people are amazing. That being said, back to the buses briefly.
Yeah.
The buses, you don't even necessarily need to ask people, because the buses have the first stop and the last stop written on them in all three languages. So English, it's all in English. And in addition to Sinhalese and Tamil. And you might not recognize the names of the cities that are listed, but you can look those up on Google, and it'll show you where that is. So it'll show you the general route that the bus is going to take. You can get a pretty
good idea. Well, if you're going on a road along the coast where you know the bus is only going to go in this direction or that direction, it's easier.
Right.
But if you're in Colombo, for example, you don't know, like, which way it's going to turn or,
you can tell it's going to end there and you know where it is now. So there's only so many ways it could possibly go.
Yeah,
so,
it's true.
So that's what we did on our first day. We're like, where's this town? And this bus just flew by. Where's this town? Look
right.
it up. Oh, that's right. to the north of here. That's wrong. Okay, what about this one?
Right.
And so then we found one where there was a town that was very far south of where we had to go, but our hotel that we wanted to go to was along that route. So we just jumped on that one. And the other thing is, if you do ask people, sometimes it's one of those cultures where sometimes they won't tell you a good answer.
Mm.
They'll tell you something just because, even if they don't know, just to avoid embarrassment.
Mm.
Usually they're pretty good, though. But the people who always know are the bus drivers. So before you get on that bus, you just ask the driver, are you going here? What's two?
There's two people on the bus, right? There's the driver and then there's the bus attendant.
Yep.
So the bus attendant, they're crazy motherfuckers. They hang out the side of the door sometime. And they'll be, like, shouting out, like, which direction the bus is going. And you just tell them, like, blah, 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 blah. You tell them the name, and they'll be like, nope. And they'll wave to you, like, wave you off, like, if it's not the right one.
Yeah.
Or if it's the right place, you're like, hurry up. Hurry the fuck up. Get on this bus, because we're taking off. And then the bus driver just... Some of the bus drivers are absolute maniacs, but that first day, all we did was really ride the bus. We had to take a couple buses to get to our hotel, and then I was so happy. There's like all these Buddhist like images and like gods on the buses, and there's like little like jimmies of color hanging all around, and I remember that moment just being like, I am living. This is awesome. There's the sound and the smells and the honks and the swerves and the, like, it's all happening here.
The women in their saris.
Oh, they're so beautiful. The saris are so beautiful. And everybody would just get on, and we were the only foreigners on the bus. They'd all just look at us, and then they'd do the little, like, side head nod thing they do. And then you'd be, like, smiling, and it was just great. And I don't know if I changed or if what happened here that is different than anywhere else, but I feel like I'm smiling more.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not sure why. Am I being positively reinforced?
Or
am I behaving different?
I'd say the people in the Philippines smiled an awful lot too, and they're really nice.
Yeah, that's true.
But it just has such a different feel to it. It feels more westernized in the Philippines. Just like here at Sri Lanka, it's just totally different from anything you know at home. And once we go to India, you'll see it's just another level entirely.
Yeah. I just feel, man, my energy is just really good here. I want to smile at every local that I meet, and so I do. And I'm not sure why I want to smile at everybody, which, I mean, I usually generally am kind of that way anyway. It's kind of like the Midwestern in me. Because Midwesterns kind of do that thing where they're like, hi, how are you? Good morning, how are you? And, you know, they do that.
Yeah.
But it's everybody just so, they see.
It's just so real.
Yeah, and so I guess I'm already kind of like that. But here, I feel like if I smile at somebody, they smile back. And it just gives me really good energy. And and then, therefore, like, I'm continuing to have good energy, and I smile at somebody else, and then they smile back, and it just keeps going, and, I want to remember that. I want to remember that feeling, for sure.
Yeah, it always happens until you see another foreigner. There's a lot of grumpy foreigners
Some
here.
Some grumpy foreigners.
A lot of people who don't smile.
Who's not seeing it the way I am, I guess.
No, I guess not. I mean, even, like, yesterday we got to this hotel, and we found there's a juice lady right outside.
Yeah.
And so we got a juice and talked to her. And then today, as soon as she saw us, she was just waving and saying hi.
Yeah.
And not even saying, like, hey, come get some more juice from me. Just saying hi.
Yeah.
And we did go up and, whoa, big lightning strike. We did go up and get some more juice from her. And it's like, she's willing to talk to us for half an hour and just smile and always, just be in such a good mood. And
yeah.
And we gave her $1 for 2 glasses of juice. And that's just her price, you know. And
fresh squeezed lime and passion fruit juice, so good. Limes are one of the cheaper fruits here right now.
Right.
So good. So refreshing because, like I said, we're hot. So we're trying to stay hydrated, which is a full-time job. And trying not to be sunburned is another full-time job. At one point, we were questioning, is our sunscreen really working? Because we feel like we're putting it on constantly, and it's not really rubbing in that well. But both of us are just getting, like, body parts, miscellaneous body parts sunburn.
I think you gotta, one day you gotta put on sunscreen just on half your face and see if it, and then you'll do an actual experiment, see if one half gets more burned than the other. Maybe the part with sunscreen will actually get burned faster.
I will help to put sunscreen on half of your body. How about that?
Can you write the word dork in my back like they did on that Police Academy movie to the guy?
To trial it out?
Yeah.
Sure.
Anyway, well, another thing, though, with the locals, I don't feel like I'm getting ripped off at all. I mean, maybe I am, but it doesn't feel that way. And some countries, it always feels like everything's a scam. Like, Vietnam is the epitome of this. They're the pinnacle.
Parts of China, like, it is, too.
Sometimes China.
Sometimes.
But sometimes, a lot of people in China will come up to you and just talk. And
yeah,
they don't
true.
Want anything from you. They just want to say hi.
Yeah, it's true.
It felt to me, and again, I only spent like a week in Vietnam, so who knows. But it just felt to me like every single person, if they said hi to me, they wanted something from me. They wanted money. Mm. They wanted me to buy something. Or they're just going to charge too much.
I don't think true in a few places.
Maybe I just remember it that way. Yeah, but here it doesn't feel like that at all. Even though it's one of those countries where you never usually don't get a receipt, and it's just people could charge you whatever they feel like charging you. We get lunch all the time here.
We just got juice for like $1 for two juices. And we went in for lunch today, and it was, you know, we're spending
like $2, $3.
Yeah.
Total for two people.
For two people to eat lunch.
Yeah. No, those places, I don't feel like they're ripping us off at all.
And like when we were in Jaffna, we recently were in the north. That was our last big stop. And we bought vegetables from the market, and it was 60 rupees for a small bag of vegetables for dinner, and that
40
is,
cents.
Yeah. So cheap.
Yeah, just about everything here is really cheap. The train is so incredibly cheap.
Yeah, so let's kind of go back to what we were saying before. So here's, you know, we talked about the regions, and, you know, like we said, the buses, we just love them. It's just you're sitting amongst the locals. Not a whole lot of tourists are riding the buses. A few of them in the south were, but we, you know, we're pretty much on the bus with the locals by ourselves. And it's just, I really enjoyed that. And it's so cheap to take the bus. So I personally feel like it's worth your time to try to take the bus occasionally if you can just ask around. It'll give you a reason to talk to the locals, give you a reason to talk to the person in your hotel. Oftentimes you just talk to the person at our guest house and be like, hey, you want to go here? Which bus do we ask for? And they're like, oh, you're going to that town? Well, you need to get a bus that goes to this town and tell the driver you want to get off at that stop, and he'll let you off.
Or we've even had it happen where we ask which bus to take, and they're like, oh, here, come on, I'll show you.
Yeah.
And then they just wait with you for the bus to come. And off you go.
And you hang out and talk to that person. That's really great. The trains, I also really cheap. So how the trains work, maybe you probably could have been better than me because you're obsessed with trains. But there's first class, second class, and third class. And first class and there's second class reserved. And those you can reserve in ahead of time. Mostly are just booked up by the tourist agencies right away. And so if you're like us, you're not planning, you're just winging it and figuring out where you want to go when you feel like you're leaving each place, then you're gonna have to buy a third class ticket on the day of. And in the most popular areas to go, such as Kandy and Ella and, you know, to the south, like you're probably not gonna get a place to sit. It's going to be really hard. You're smashing on those trains in the high season. And we're here during the high season and during Chinese New Year. So we kind of had the first two trains he went on, we never got a seat.
Right. But the other side of that is, though, if you do get first class, it's kind of going to be a miserable journey because it's going to be a lonely journey. Because let alone the fact that it's 10 times more than second class. Like, first class for this Colombo to Kandy.
It's what, about like $8?
No, I think it was like 10. It was like
1,000 rupees?
It was like
1,000 rupees.
Oh, it was 1,000? So, okay, so like $6. But then for third class, it was like 50 rupees or 75 or something. Mm-hmm. Way cheaper. And second class is only slightly better than third class. It's slightly more expensive.
But
they're pretty much the same.
A lot of people, you know, can't be comfortable standing for 4 hours.
Yeah, okay.
And smash sardine. You've got knee problems, or, you know, I have knee problems, and the day that we took a four-hour train and we stood the whole time, my knees were so sore when we got there. So, like, I totally understand that some people that's just not something they're interested in doing. And if that's an issue for you, then you're going to have to plan in advance a little more. You're going to probably have to go for a tourist agency and book a little differently than we did.
Or just not take trains, just take buses. Fine. Fair enough. If you have health problems and you can't take a packed-in standing train for 3 or 4 hours. I get that. But here's the thing. If you get first class, and again, this is advertised as a good thing, but you get air conditioning, which means there's windows sealing you off from the outside world, glass windows. And you're in this compartment It's like you're not in life. You're not experiencing life. You're just sitting there in this compartment, walled off from the world, in your cozy little air conditioning, and you're watching the world go by. But it's like, it's more like watching a movie versus being in the movie.
That's right. I think what you're trying to say is, this is the only country that I've been in so far. Actually, I was in Hungary. Hungary, you had windows you could pull down. But this is one of those countries that you can ride a train kind of the old school way. And remember when we were at the first time in Colombo, we were getting on the train to Kandy, and you went and you said, hey, Dan, go buy some popcorn. And you went and you bought some popcorn. And we sat there and we ate the popcorn. And the train station are like taking a step back in time.
Yeah.
They just have old measurement things for weighing in the suitcases. They have like old stuff, old timetables, old clocks,
they don't
old
have
trains,
any, like,
windows being
digital.
Pulled down. Yeah. And it's just, it's like being in a movie, watching a movie happening, just what you just said.
Yeah.
And eating our popcorn, I just felt like it was just timeless. And
yeah.
It was amazing. And so there's that. But then there's also, you know, for you, I remember watching you in the train. You were transformed into a 5-year-old child, standing next to the door, sticking your head out the side, feeling the air. And you're right, it's life. It's not safe necessarily always, but it's living. It's like the wind, the train, the people, the travel,
like,
the adventure, you know, all of that.
You're smashed in with all these people. There's like brown hands everywhere reaching for safety spot, safety things to hold on to, and a couple of white hands mixed in, and then
yeah.
You're like touching each other's bodies and sweat's pouring down, but like you're gonna get through it together.
Yeah.
It's like the crowd that you just like pump each other up, and they don't close the doors. So here's a hilarious thing. There's this game that they play of because if the train, if you can tell the train's gonna be really packed, the worst place to be is in the aisle.
Yeah, it's true.
Because you can't even see out of the windows because the windows are too low. So it is boring, and that does suck. But then it gets better if you're between the cars and you can look out the door because the door is floor to ceiling.
Right.
And now you can look out. But the best place to be is hanging out that door because now you're sticking your head out.
Like our first train.
And now you got the wind on you. Yeah.
And our first train from Colombo to Kandy, that's where we ended up with. And on that ride, you're riding up into hill country. You're starting to get, it's not really like tea plantation yet. It's still pretty forested, but it's beautiful.
Right. So
and the classical train ride in the country is Kandy to Ella. And Kandy, we didn't go to Ella because we decided, we talked to every traveler we're talking to. They're all going to Ella. They've got a Starbucks. They've got all these like comfortable things. And we just love the old school ways of things here. It was just really our thing. And so we kind of skipped a couple of towns, both Ella and a couple of places in the south that every traveler seemed to be going to. We're like, okay, we were going to go there, but now we're going to go to a smaller place nearby.
Yeah.
And change our plans a little bit. So let's talk about the hill country a little bit.
Well, I want to talk about this game
I
was saying. Okay. So there's this game you play. Because you want that spot, that coveted spot. There's not many of them where you can hang out the door. That's the goal.
That's right.
And if you're on a packed train carriage, there's about 50 people standing. Maybe 20 of you have pretty good spots, but only 2 of you get the really good spots. So the way to get it is to be last aboard. And that's it. That's the only secret. But everybody knows this. So you're stopped. A couple of people start piling on. They're like, whatever. I know I'm not going to get the coveted spot. Then the conductor guy stands outside, blows his whistle, indicating the train can start leaving. And then there's about 10 people lurking, still outside the train. And the train starts to move just very slowly at first. Because it takes so long for these trains to build up their momentum. and a guy jumps on, and he's like, yes, I got the spot. But then the train moves a little bit faster, and another guy jumps on right after him. Huh. And he's like, out of the way, I got the spot. And then another guy jumps on. He's like, move over, bitch. You got to let me on. Now I got it. And so I did this at one point. I don't know if you remember this. One of our rides, I was like fourth. Mm-hmm. And I was like, yes, now I've got it. Like, I planned it perfectly. And then just as the train was starting to move too fast for someone to run and jump on it, someone ran and jumped on it. And they're like, get out of here. And so now I lost my spot. I'm like, oh, shit. So it's like you got to time it so that you're last. But if you wait too long, the train's going to be moving too fast and you won't be able to jump. So I have seen a couple people like jog, run up, and there's two bars outside the train. And if you get a good speed, so you're going the same speed as the train, and you jump up high enough and grab those bars, you can just get on and not lose your legs. And I think that's the best way to do it. And if you're really good, you get on like that, and then you sit. And you hang your legs over the edge, and you sit there with your ass is inside the train. The rest of your body's outside. Legs hanging over edge, arms outside, hopefully holding onto one of those bars, head outside, and then you are just on cloud
well,
nine.
Well, the footrest, having a footrest there is nice. Most of them have a footrest, but not all.
Yeah, they have these
then
rails.
Then you don't need to worry about getting your feet chopped off.
There's a few funny signs in this country. One of them is, it says, like, it's illegal to stand on the rails while the train's moving. And, like, every single train rail has a guy standing on it. Every single one. There's never been one that's empty.
So, yeah, the game, I guess I didn't pay as close attention to the whole game thing as you did. I guess I saw some guys kind of jumping on last minute. For me, it was more of my perspective was a little bit different than that. My perspective was like, shit, we're not going to get on the train. This train looks packed. That car looks packed. That car looks packed. How are we going to get on? Like,
yeah,
we need to get
true.
On now. Or we're not going to get on this train. We're going to have to wait for, like, 5 hours for the next train.
And then that one will be packed.
Yeah, so like, I guess I didn't quite have this adventurous... Once you got on the train, it felt adventurous and free and amazing. But that moment of every car going past that was packed was a bit
it's disconcerting when you see that. Like,
yeah.
Train stops, it's totally packed, two people get off, and like 15 want to get on. And you're like, how the hell is this going to work? But we took some initiative a couple times where we just started piling backpacks up in a corner and like just threw everybody's gear all around us. And that made some extra space, having the mound of gear.
Yeah, that's true.
Probably the worst one was where we were with those surfers, those Australians, and the guy had a surfboard with him.
He put it in the baggage thing in the front.
Yeah, I was like, how is this ever going to work?
Right.
And the one of the employees allowed him to put it in like the storage area that the employees use.
Yeah, that's true.
So that was nice. But we always got on, so it somehow worked out all the time.
In the beginning, I was thinking, how can they operate this way? It just seemed like total chaos to me. Like, how can you not know how many tickets you're selling? Do they just sell however many tickets are people in line, or do they have a max number, or you know? And also the train seemed rather short. So I thought, like, well, if they're this packed and they know it's high season, why aren't they adding on more cars? You know, all those, like, logical Western brain type thinking thoughts. And you're like, wait a minute, I shouldn't be having these thoughts here. This is not how it works.
No, that's right. Oh, that's good. The whole mindset of the developing world is so different than the developed world. Although, just before I move on, if you remember my first book, 1,000 Days Between Part 1, Greyhound, a country which I hate and which will never sponsor this show, they just sell as many tickets as they want also.
Oh.
If 1,000 people come up and buy tickets for a Greyhound bus, they'll sell 1,000 tickets. And they just have the one bus. They don't care. They don't care at all. And, like, they won't allow you to stand either. So if the bus is full, they're just like, yeah, fuck you. Get the next one.
Mm.
And that bus is full. Yeah, fuck you. Get the next one.
Mm.
And they'll just go on all day. They don't care at all.
Mm.
So then that's obviously an American company.
Huh.
Yeah, it's horrible customer service. But at least in Sri Lanka, they'll figure out a way to get you on that train. You bought the ticket.
Yeah,
and
true.
And shit, the ticket costs you 50 cents. Like, you're not out a lot of money.
No, true.
Yeah.
So, all right, we love riding the train. And it's slow. It's not always comfortable. But something about it just kind of brings you together with others. Like, if you let your heart and your mind be a little open, you're going to meet somebody. You're going to talk to somebody. We've exchanged contacts with people we met on the train. I'm still talking with that young local guy from Colombo who he was riding from Colombo to Kandy, his hometown, for the weekend. And he's studying, and he's going to study in California next year. He's been checking in on me every few days for a whole month here on Facebook Messenger.
Hmm.
And we met him because we're crammed together on the train.
Yeah.
And we're still in contact and, you know, chatting, and just a really nice young man. And so if you let it, it can be a really good experience for you to just chat it up with some travelers and some locals, and just got to kind of get over the discomfort.
That's
part
right.
of it.
And even if you do have, like, the, as we said before, like, problems standing for a long time, you can sit. Just, like, sit on your backpack. Or if you're old, actually, people will give up their seats for you, for sure.
Yeah, that's true.
We've noticed that a bunch of times, too.
Yeah. So we basically took the train into the hill country, went to Kandy, saw some temples there. And I would say, you know, the first kind of shock that we had in Kandy, we were going to go to the sacred the tooth relic temple, where they have supposedly Buddha's tooth is stored there. There's kind of a crazy story behind that. The sticker price on some things is a bit of a shocker, where the foreigner price is 1500 rupees and the local price is like 50 rupees.
Yeah, that's definitely one downside here. And to be honest, we just skipped a lot of that stuff, like the big tourist attractions where foreigners have to pay like 20 times more than the locals. I don't know, it just wasn't worth it for us to go to these places. And actually, we talked with Ruan about this, who was our Couchsurfing host and last podcast episode. He's actually kind of upset about this too, even though he's a local, just because the foreign tourists are opting not to go to some of these places just because the price is too high.
And the foreigners, these are really important places, not foreigners, the locals. These are really important places for the locals. They want you to go to these places and learn about their history and their culture. I think the people here are quite proud. They're quite proud that people are wanting to come to Sri Lanka, that they're here and they're present. The country has been through a lot of stuff with the civil war that was in the 80s up to 2009, and I think they're quite proud to have everybody here right now.
That's right. And actually, so like the tooth temple, I guess maybe if we had understood that this is maybe the most important temple of the whole country, we would have gone. But at the time, we didn't really know that, and we're just like, yeah, it's the main temple.
No, I knew
in
that.
Town.
It's just that there's plenty of important temples here.
All right, so there's plenty of other temples. Some of them are free. Some of them you just pay a little bit of just a donation. And this one was 1,500 rupees, which I guess when you put it into dollars and you say it's $10, it doesn't feel like that much money. But we would spend maybe like 300 or 400 rupees throughout the day just on stuff. And to spend 1,500 just felt ridiculous.
I think more what the issue is that if you are going to all of the big places, for example, if you're going to go to a national park, that several thousand rupees. If you're going to go to, you know, several big tourist places, it really adds up. And when you're on a budget, it's just a bit too much. And so you have to kind of decide, you know, if you're on a budget, maybe you're here and you're never planning on coming back and you know, you're working full time and you have the money, then, you know, you can choose to hire a driver and you can, it's really easy here to hire a driver and have them take you to a list of sites that you want to go to.
Yeah.
And I'm sure they'll all be really friendly and really helpful and have a really great time. And, you know, for us, it's just that we don't want to spend $30 a day on tourist attractions. We have to be a bit more selective. So that's what we did.
Right. Yeah, when you travel for a year, you've got a totally different mindset. And actually, I think probably these temples are probably doing just fine, even though they've raised the prices so much. Just because a lot of the tourists are like package tourists. They're high-end tourists. They don't care if they spend that much money. But backpackers, a lot of them are just not going to go.
Yeah. So we spent about 3 days in Kandy first and went to a few temples. Had a really nice time there. The guest house that we stayed at had a balcony, and I remember doing nightly yoga on the balcony. And one of the routines that I kind of had to change with the hot temperatures was, instead of doing yoga in the morning, was changing during the evenings, just because it was cooler. And I really appreciated the cooler temperatures that night there. It was really nice.
Yeah, totally.
And after that, we took the train to Nuwara Eliya, which the train station name is Nanu Oya. And we stayed between the train station and the town in a really lovely guest house that the balcony we stayed at overlooked the tea plantations. And that was another really amazing train ride, seeing the tea plant, taking the train past the tea plantation was just amazing.
Yeah, looking out over the valley of forests and tea plantations and seeing the people pick tea leaves and yeah, just great stuff.
And so that whole region was all, I believe, forest and jungle prior to the British coming. And when the British came, or people from Scotland, like Sir Thomas Lipton, the famous Lipton tea that started here. So.
Right, the tea plantation we stayed next to was the Edinburgh tea plantation, which is kind of funny. And then there's other things there, like there's a golf course in town, and there's like the high tea place, like the Grand
yeah.
Hotel has high tea at 4 p.m. or whenever the British do that.
Right.
There's a racetrack there.
Yeah, it is kind of dubbed, Nuwara Eliya is sort of dubbed as like Little England, they call it. But yeah, the area around there is really beautiful. There's waterfalls, and it was really cool to take. We took a local bus out to the Pedro's tea plantation, and that was really nice to learn about the tea leaves and how they dry the leaves. And
yeah, it was funny. It was very similar to taking a brewery tour.
That's true. It was like that.
Except it was tea leaves. It had all the kind of like the characteristics, the step 1, 2, 3, and watching all the machinery and watching the workers.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, much cooler temperatures there too. That was really nice. And then we decided, we were really kind of wrestling around with going to Adam's Peak. Adam's Peak is the famous place to go for the pilgrimage. A lot of pilgrims go there. Local people will go there and hike to the top. You start hiking around 2:30 in the morning or 3 in the morning, and you hike all the way to the top. But during the pilgrim season, which is now, you will be doing it with hundreds of other people.
Yeah, it's super crowded. From everything we heard, we just decided to skip it. The other thing is, like, they'll call it rock or mountain climbing. Like, you can climb a mountain, or they'll call it hiking, and, like, come on, let's be totally honest here. It's climbing a staircase. It's climbing a staircase, that's all it is. And there's 100 people in front of you, and you can only move as fast as the guy in front of you, which would drive me crazy.
Yeah.
So we skipped that,
and we went to Horton National Park instead.
Yeah. Horton Plains.
Horton Plains. which also had a lot of people. Yeah. We decided to kind of take a bit, what most people would do is from Nuwara Eliya, they will, or from Haptula, they will take a van, and it's about, I think it's about 4,000 rupees to take a van from there, leaving your guest house around 4:35 in the morning, going to the national park. You wait in the parking lot, wait for the train to go past.
There's another train.
You wait in the parking lot for your van driver to go buy all the tickets. Tickets go on sale at 6 in the morning, and then the park opens, and a flood of tourist vans goes to the other parking lot, and then you can go hiking. And we had met a guy the day before who said, hey, listen, I've been there twice. If you want to see the World End Trail, it is beautiful, but it's a lot of people. There's another trail. There's three trails there. You take the other one, and you won't see anybody the whole day. And so we did that. That's what we did instead, and it was a beautiful hike.
Yeah, this park was so crowded. I mean, this is kind of the characteristic of our first week. We were really right on the tourist trail, right where everybody goes. And everybody pretty much goes to the same spots. And this is one of those spots, Horton Plains. And just about everyone who goes there brings a guide with them, or they bring a driver, and they're just like following the herd, like walk down this trail. You look out, there's a nice lookout point, and then you walk back. We just took the longer trail, and it was awesome. We saw a couple of groups on our way back, but that was it. We pretty much had it to ourselves. Just such a night and day difference, just from walking on a different trail.
Yeah, that's true.
But there's not much actual hiking that you can do in the wilderness here. That's maybe one downside to Sri Lanka. The national parks pretty much are closed off for hiking. You can only do a safari in a vehicle. This is one of...
That was one of the only ones you can do without a guide.
Yeah, maybe the only one.
Yeah.
So then we should talk about these safaris.
Yeah.
There's like a bunch of different national parks here and reserves. And we only went to one. Depending on your budget and your time, like you could conceivably go to a bunch of these.
It's really hard to choose because... they all sound amazing.
Right.
And some of them are better for birding. Some are better for elephants. And Yala supposedly is best for leopards. And so that's why I think we chose that one, because you really wanted to see a leopard.
Right. I was hoping that we'd see a leopard. I mean, it still seemed like a long shot, just because big cats are elusive.
Mm-hmm.
They don't just come out and show themselves to you very much.
Yeah.
But I thought, you know what, if we, like, sometimes it's like this. You can either be guaranteed to see 50 elephants or have a pretty good chance of seeing a handful of elephants and a smaller chance of seeing a leopard. And it's like, well, okay. You just got to figure out which one works best for you, or go to both.
There is... a chart in Lonely Planet that does a nice job of showing you which ones are best for which season. It's one thing to ask around about if you're, depending on what time of the year you're coming, is find out the activity of the animals and where you should go based on the season. That does make a difference, apparently.
Right. And if you're near a park, just go ask someone who just went there, like, what did you see? I mean, that's always the best way to get up-to-date info.
That's right.
So we went to Tissamahara and went to Yala National Park, which is one of the busier ones, maybe the busiest. But it's busy for a reason, because it's really amazing. And so there's all these safari vehicles. They're basically just pickup trucks with a big cabin, cabin in the back that holds six people. And I think there's some variation in prices, but they're all... fairly similar for how much you're going to pay. If you want to do a private tour with just two people, then it's going to be more money. I don't really see why you would do that, though, because you're going to you're going to see the same things. If there's six people in the back or only two, I don't get why you'd want to have only two, unless you hate people. But there's no need to sign up far in advance for these. They go out all the time, like every day. So get in the town. Before you even get to your hotel, there's going to be 10 people asking you to go with them. And as soon as you get in your hotel, they're going to try to sell you safari tickets or tours. So
I think the thing to do, though, is definitely to ask about the driver. One of the issues that I had read about, and I think when we had gotten to our hotel, we had a few numbers we had gotten from around town. Like, people were stopping us and constantly trying to talk to us about, do you want to go on a safari? And on our way there, we took two or three buses there. And one of the stops we had, we had just eaten lunch at this restaurant, little local shop. And somebody was burning trash nearby, and it was getting into the restaurant. My eyes were watering. I just couldn't handle it anymore. And I went to sit outside, and every single tuk-tuk driver is, like, trying to sell me a safari. And I just wanted to be left alone. Kind of had one of those low moments, right? But we did get a few names of people who were, you weren't having that moment. And so you were willing to talk to people and get numbers and get contacts. And once we did get to our hotel, we asked several questions about the driver. And I think that's kind of the important thing to do, because there are a lot of young guys who just want to, like, buzz around and go really fast and maybe aren't as experienced and don't have quite the eye that some drivers do. So that's one really important thing to ask, I think.
Right. The driver makes all the difference, really, because he's your guide, too. So our guide happened to be awesome. I mean, I think it was just luck of the draw, but he was amazing. He could spot wildlife like almost no one I've ever met. So, although it's so hard to know, because if you're at a hotel or whatever signing up, if you ask, like, oh, so how good is the guide? Or how good is the driver? I mean, they're not going to go, oh, well, he's a total dumbass. He just started.
Right.
They'll never tell you that.
Right.
Maybe you should say,
I did
how
tell
old is
the
he?
Driver or the guest house owner, I said, listen, I don't want somebody who's just going to drive around really fast and try to show us everything. I want somebody who's going to take his time.
Okay.
And, like, this is what we're looking for. I told him that.
Yeah, okay.
So I said, please let us know if this driver is like that.
Probably age will give you your best indicator. I don't think there's any other really dividing factors between these guys. They're all men. They're all local.
Right, that's true.
Just how old they are. And our guide was a little older. And so I think that made all the difference.
Mm.
Yeah, so we had just an awesome day. There's always the question of, do you want to sign up for a half day or a full day? And we did a full day.
It's only like $20 more, but it was several hours longer.
Yeah, I was like, well, twice as long. Yeah.
More than twice, yeah. It was a long day. We left at 4:30 in the morning and got back at 7 p.m. at night. So it's an exhausting day. But we saw so many beautiful birds. And in addition to just seeing the birds, our driver was quite into birds. I could tell that was kind of his jam. And we learned the names of a lot of birds, which is really special for the rest of the time here, is riding the train or riding our bikes. We saw birds and we could identify different species.
Right. Yeah, we just had a fantastic day. And yes, it was crowded, but at the same time, the vehicles got kind of separated, spread out a little bit.
I think it's quite a big national park. It's big enough that you kind of get away.
It is this weird thing, though, because everybody gets there right before it opens. And so you've literally got over 100 of these safari vehicles just lining up, like engines revving, like ready to just take off and go into this park. But within 10 minutes, you don't see any other people.
Hmm.
Or you do, but just here and there. I don't know. I mean, probably a more remote wilderness experience would have its advantages. We talked about going to a different park that we just ended up not going to, where we might not see as much wildlife, but we wouldn't have the crowds either. So, I don't know. I mean,
You're just gonna, for us, it's more of timing. We talked about coming to Whitpatnu National Park up here in the north. But, you know, we just got to this space where after going to Jaffna, which is in the northern peninsula of the country, you know, we're kind of tired and we just needed a rest day, and that's okay too.
Right.
So it is what it is. So that kind of wrapped up our time in the hill country and then came down to Yala. Yala is it's in the south. There are several between Yala National Park and Gal. There are several beach towns, and you just gotta figure out what kind of beach is your kind of beach. There are surfer beaches. There are beaches and hotels right on the beach that you're gonna spend, you know, $60 to $120 a night, $200 a night, and you can sip cocktails and drink coffee and be all westernized. There are places that are more boutique places. There are places that are a bit more local. There are places that are a bit more chill. So you just got to kind of figure out which one is your jam, which one's what you're looking for. And we chose to go to some quieter places.
Yeah, and we did do some looking around. We were about to stay at one beach and then went to a hotel and they were full, and then they called around and asked like four other hotels and they were all full, and then we met some a tourist walking around and she said, oh yeah, there's like all kinds of tourists around here and it's a big party area and everything's like double the price it should be. I'm like, oh, all right, we'll go somewhere else.
So we just hopped back on the bus and went to the next town and got off there and kind of just found the right place. So
yeah, so we ended up staying in a guest house about 5 minute walk from the beach, and the price, how much were we paying there? $2,000?
About that.
Yeah, so like $13 a night. And we weren't right on the beach, but we could get there within, like I said, 5 minutes, just walk out. So that was like really awesome. And it was perfect beach too, for surfing anyway.
Beaches in the south are really beautiful. The only thing that I would say is a caution, you know, first is just find the one that you're looking for. Like Dan and I have a certain way of traveling. It might not be your style, you know, like that's just the way it is. Everybody's got their own jam. The thing that I would look out for, though, is some of these areas, the space between the road, the main road, and the beach is really narrow. There's not a lot of space.
Yeah, sometimes.
So,
yeah.
You know, if you do book ahead in advance, you know, just kind of look at the Google map and kind of see how close you are, because some places, literally, the bus is driving right past these, you know, foreigners laying in their bikinis, and it's pretty close.
It's like highway traffic going past you.
So you're listening to that all day. We were in a space where there was a bit of a hill, so our guest held up on a hill, and then we went down the hill to get to the beach, and so there's a bluff between the road, which was really nice.
God, that's one thing. I probably harp on about this too much, but I don't like booking in advance for hotels, just because sometimes you're going to get to a hotel and there's going to be noise that they don't tell you about online. And like the biggest example of this that I still remember is back in the Philippines with your parents, with your mom. We walked around at this beach and we found a hotel that was $240 a night, and the hotel was really nice, the rooms were great. It was right next to a rooster crowing all day. And it, like, the rooster was on the next property over, but you could hear it clear as day.
Yeah.
You're going to pay $240 and sleep next to that, and you won't be able to sleep. And so there's other, like, little factors like that with hotels and their location. Sometimes there's just a lot of traffic noise. Or you turn on the air conditioner and it rattles, or the fan rattles. And if you're booked in advance, you're locked into that room.
Yeah, that's right.
Can't get out of it. So, even the other night, like, we had a hard time closing the windows because we don't want mosquitoes coming in. There weren't any mosquito nets. Eventually, we made it work, but...
Oh, we were about to leave.
Yeah, we were about to leave. We're like, well, the window doesn't close, and I don't want to get dengue.
And then he showed you how to close it, and we're like, okay.
Yeah, so we got it to work. But again, you don't want to be locked into that. And And trust me, they're just not going to tell you. If there's some little thing that it's important to you, like mosquito nets are important to me. They're not important to everybody, but they're important to me. And a hotel might, they definitely will not just tell you, we do not have mosquito nets here. Unless you, maybe if you call them, they might tell you that.
Yeah.
And admit it. But otherwise, you're going to show up and go, wait a minute, where's my mosquito net? Or why do I hear a rooster right next door? Or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, also another big highlight of the South for a lot of people is the Galle Fort. Galle has a Dutch fort. There are several Dutch forts in the country. So this is an interesting piece of history for this area. Is that it, this poor place has been, the Portuguese and the Dutch and the British have all been here and kind of left their stamp.
Yeah, colonizing.
But, yeah. It is, it's part of their history and something to go and see. We took a walk around the fort for the day. But yeah, the South is really, it's really nice. Hill country is beautiful. A little bit cooler, tea plantations, a couple national parks, some nice towns. South is, you know, just pick your beach, man. Just take your pick of what kind of beach you like. If you're a surfer, if you're into snorkeling or diving, if you're into relaxing. We had one more chunk that we decided to do for us was really important. Was to get up to Jaffna to the north. And this was the area of the country that was where most of the heavy fighting was for the Civil War. The Tamil Tigers against the SLA, the Sinhalese Army, Liberation Army, the Sri Lankan Army. So that was important for us to go see. And there's really not, you know, big tourist attractions there. It's really more of a place that you're going to go if you have time and you want to see how places change and you want to see how people change and opening up to tourism now. So what did you think about the Jaffna area?
It's still pretty rough. It felt more like India to me right away. And I think that's just because the people there are mostly Tamil.
Yeah.
Which a lot of Indians are Tamil, obviously. So it's also more Hindu.
Mm-hmm.
Most of it, Sri Lanka is Buddhist. And then there's some Muslims mixed in, some Christians, some Hindus all over. But Jaffna, it's like a large percentage are Hindu. So just the culture is a little bit different. The temples, obviously, are totally different.
And I will add in that there is another Tamil group that is in the hill country. That I don't know if you knew about this or not, but the British, because they were in India, the British brought a bunch of Tamils over to work the tea plantation. So they call them plantation Tamils. They kind of categorize them in different groups. Actually, it's a political, it's important when you talk about the war, I think. Because they're different politically as far as who's fighting who in the war.
Right, but I mean, I know almost nothing about this, so I shouldn't even really talk about it.
Yeah,
but like,
true.
It just seems like only a small percentage of the people in the north were actually involved in the war efforts, and a lot of them just got sucked into it just because they had to. They didn't want to fight this war either, but they're just forced into it. So you could just tell going there, it just felt more run down, more devastated than the South.
I think one thing that I felt, there's so many abandoned buildings and things that just haven't been restored yet. Some empty places. Everything just seemed like it had a story to it. That you just don't know what the story was.
Right.
And I will add that this month in Sri Lanka, I've been taking a communication class. Shout out to MCK. It's called MasterCom Life Shop. And for the last 3 weeks, I've been taking a class where every day I get an email sent to me with a video or something to read, some type of communication strategy to think about. And a few of the things that I've been working on are are not being judgmental about people that I meet, and in listening deeper, asking better questions, being more present. They're all really great things for me to work on as a human, as in relationships, but also as a traveler. And one of the things that was special about Jaffna for me was we had a couple experiences where, you know, just because we had time, we just sat down and stuff happened. And so it's really not about the tourist attraction, it's about the people who stop and talk to you. And we met two Sri Lankan guys who were from that area. Families left during the war to go to Canada, and they come back every year now for 1 month and then with it. And they just stopped and talked to us for an hour. We were just stopping to get a tea. We were riding motorbikes, and we were tired of riding motorbikes. We needed to get gas. We needed to get a snack. And we just sat down for tea and talked to them for a long time. And those are the kind of things that it's really not about getting to every tourist attraction. It's really about being open and just listening sometimes.
Yeah.
It's a really good lesson for me to be learning and to continue to work on.
And that day we actually met several groups of people that came and hung out with us and talked to us.
Yeah, so after that we recycled up a bit further north from Pedro Point, and we ended up at a Hindu, we were like, all these people in beautiful saris were heading to the beach. And we're like, dude, what's going on? Let's pull over and check this out. Well, it was some sort of Hindu festival. And everybody in this area was seemed to be there on this beach. And this one guy had left Sri Lanka and lived in London. He came up to us and said, like, hey, come here, I'll show you. This is Ganesh. This is this, you know, God. This is this person. And here, this is the guy who is the temple leader. He can bless you. So what are your names? And he gave him our names, and he blessed us, and we got the, I don't even know the name for the paint on your forehead.
The dot. I don't know what it's really called.
Yeah. Yeah, and it was beautiful. They just, like, welcomed us right into this little festival, and they went on our way. And then later in the day, our motorbike broke down. And we're like, crap, we're like 20 kilometers from Jaffna to get back. And we kind of knew this motorbike was a piece of shit. The speedometer didn't work. It had two different mirrors, you know.
It was all busted up.
Yeah, but whatever. You know, we're just going to scoot around a little bit.
I could hear it, though. I could hear it squeaking.
Yeah.
And I was like, shit, this doesn't sound good. And I just hope we can make it back before it just completely falls apart.
So we're just riding along. All of a sudden, the motorbike just stops going. Dan's like revving it. Nope. Like, the wheel's not even turning anymore.
Right.
And turned out it was the belt. So one guy on a bike stops. He doesn't speak any English. We don't speak any Tamil.
Right.
And we called the owner, and he talked to the owner on the phone. And then two other guys pulled over and stopped, and they made this makeshift tow. They had some rope on the back of their bike. This might be a common thing.
Oh, tow, T-O-W.
Yeah.
Not T-O-E.
Yeah, sorry. So there must be a common thing that scooters break down. So, like, a couple of people we saw then had ropes on their scooters. So they just tied it onto their scooter, and they broke a tree, tied a stick on one end. So Dan was holding on to the stick, kind of like a water ski. Imagine you're water skiing, but you're on a scooter. So Dan's riding the scooter. One hand, left hand, is holding the stick and the rope. And right hand is holding the scooter to maneuver it. And I'm on the back of the guy's scooter. And he pulls us along to this temple where they agreed that the owner would come meet us. So we sit there and we just hang out. We're just watching life go by. The old lady is smacking some cows on their ass with a rope to try to get the cows to cross the road and eat on the other side. And locals are streaming up to this temple to go worship. And little kids are, we're close to like the water source for the town. So all these little kids are racing and running around and riding their bikes and going and getting water. And And it was really special just to watch life happening. And had our bike not broken down, we would have just cruised on by.
Oh, that's right. I went into the temple too. And this is cool. I went into a couple different Hindu temples. Last time I was in India, I didn't go into the temples. But we've obviously been to a bunch of Buddhist temples too. And there it's like, they're so modest. You have to cover your shoulders. You have to take off your hat. You have to wear long pants or long dress. You can't have a lot of skin showing. Well, you walk into the Hindu temple, and if you're a guy, right away they're like, you have to take off your shirt.
It's like, and the first time the guy didn't know how to say it, so he was just trying to like mime to you that you needed to take your shirt off.
Yeah.
It's pretty funny.
You may not wear anything else. Like the men just wear a towel, basically. And that's it. And it's like, damn, this is my kind of religion, you know? This is like, this is where it's at. You take off your clothes to go pray. And they're chanting and passing around, like, smoking urn things. And they're, like, a lot of the guys who are in the temple, they'll just sit in the corner and lay on the ground and pass out. And it's really interesting. And so much more relaxed than some of the other religious settings that we've seen.
It's interesting to see how everybody is coexisting. And you know, right now we're sitting on this roof and I can see a Buddhist temple straight ahead. I can see a church off to my left. You know, and you've got all these different religions that are practicing and they all have different beliefs. And I don't really know how they all work. Something that I should learn more about. You know, I understand the basic principles, but there's still so much I don't know.
Oh yeah, it's complicated.
And it's interesting as a traveler, you know, because you want to be respectful and you wanna observe people and especially here, you can see, and I'm sure India is gonna be more of the same. But you can see how important spirituality is to people. Really important. It's a big part of their culture. They identify themselves with what their religion is.
Yeah, that's true. More so than in most of the West.
Yes.
Like, you are what you worship. Like, that's who you are. I mean, I guess it's true with like the Mormon church. Like, you could say, I am Mormon. And that's the most important thing that I'm going to talk about. Or some specialized religions, but not for the most part. Most people don't talk about it or don't outwardly show it. Here it's just really outward in appearance. Like
how you dress, where you walk, where you go.
I guess I haven't really thought about this, but pretty much everyone who walks by, I could tell you what their religion is just by how they're dressed.
That's true.
And not by what they look like at like their skin color or something, but it's just the way they take care of themselves with their dress, their hair. Once we go to India, you'll see like the Sikhs with the long beards, the turbans. You can just tell what they are. And whereas in Western countries, it would be harder to tell for the most part. Yeah. So that was the north. We just spent a couple days up there.
Yeah.
It was interesting. I don't think you have to go see it if you're here for a shorter time. That's probably the area
I think if you go to Jaffna, it should be because it's a special reason to go. I think I definitely think from reading the reviews and everything that I saw online, there are people who are going there and saying, oh, this place isn't this and isn't that, and it's not you know, it made me feel a little sad. People just kind of had expectations of this is how I should be treated as a traveler. And this is how the guest house should have all these comfortable things for me. And this place is recovering from a horrible war that ended 9 years ago. And you're complaining about some things that are pretty luxurious and working right now.
Yeah.
You know, I'm listening to the book about the war right now, and a lot of civilians were lost. It was really quite brutal. And, you know, if that's the kind of travel, if you need to have certain comfort from your traveling, that's fine. But, you know, this is probably not the area for you then. You got to go there and just lower your expectations a little bit, be a bit more humble, just smile and observe and learn what you can, you know?
Right.
That's the kind of place I think Jaffna is right now.
Yeah. That's interesting. Now that we're on the subject, how you do hear people complaining here, and they're like, oh, the bed is a little too hard. Can you do something? And the guy's like, yeah, my parents were killed in the war. You know, it's like, it's awful.
Didn't have a bed. You know, probably were like sleeping in a refugee camp or, you know,
right.
Crap like that. And just so many privileges that we have. Like, I've always felt safe. My family has always been safe. And
right.
So I try to remember that.
But here's the other side, though. And another example of that actually is that more people can relate to is the Bali volcano.
Mm.
That there was a volcano that erupted in Bali in Indonesia last year.
Mm.
And mostly, I guess mostly Australians, but a lot of people just got caught on the island. The airport was closed for a few days.
Mm.
And so there were people complaining on Twitter and stuff. Like, it's a nightmare. It's an absolute nightmare. I've been trapped on this island for 3 days. I can't fly home to Australia. And then people are like, do you care at all about the people who live on the island? And like, that's their home and it's getting destroyed by this volcano. Like, is that important to you at all? So it sounds like they're just being so petty. But remember once you told me if a five-year-old complains about something stupid, they're like, Johnny stole my crayon. And you're like, oh, shut up. That's stupid. Like, who cares? But it's like, it's a really big deal to the kid. And you have to pay attention to the kid's needs. And you know it's not a big deal at all. But to them it is. And what's important is what they're thinking at that moment. So maybe to someone who goes and complains in a war-torn zone, like, about their bed being too hard or whatever it is, I don't know, maybe it's an important thing for them.
Yeah.
I don't know, maybe I'm
I think
too much sympathy, though.
Yeah, just something to think about, you know, as a traveler, I'm learning how to be better about this, is to have consideration and to let go of some of our judgment and our needs and just think things through in somebody else's perspective before we go ahead and have that, you know, adult tantrum over not having certain things, you know. And I know living in China, I've had some adult tantrums in the bank because things didn't make sense and just not tantrums, but, you know, was upset about something. And it's not the workers' fault that the government rules don't make sense.
Yeah.
And I know that. And it's just something for me to consider and to practice having compassion and understanding and letting things go. That it's not your culture and it's not always going to work the same.
No. And, like, another example of that is just when our bike broke down, our motorbike, we were stuck. And we were kind of in the middle of nowhere when it broke down. But, hey, you know what?
I mean, on one end, we could have been angry and said,
yeah.
God, why did this guy give us this shithole bike? Like, how could he have done that to us? Well, you know, he doesn't have a ton of money. He's trying to start up a business by having his home be a guest house and, you know, work with his friend. And it was his friend's bike. And, you know, they came. They bought the part, they talked to the locals that we found, they came, and while I was sitting there, and a couple of kids came along, and they were talking to Dan, and they loved Dan's blue blockers, and they're all like, selfie, like, can we take a selfie with you? And, you know, we didn't really have a common language, but they were all trying him on, and we just had fun kind of playing charades with these kids, right? And we were just there in the moment. We were just appreciating this spot. We were stranded, but it was okay. And when these guys showed up, I made a conscious decision to be, hey, thanks for coming. Like, thanks for coming to help us out.
Yeah.
And just to show appreciation and gratitude instead of being some entitled, angry bitch that they gave me a bike that ended up breaking down. If there's two ways you can go about things. You always have a choice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they're making the most of their situation.
That's right.
Yeah, put yourself in someone else's shoes. I guess there's that old chestnut.
That's right. Overall, Sri Lanka has been amazing. You know, I have to say I'm leaving with a bit of emotion. I just, the people have been so great, and you know, I've learned a lot here about just being present and talking to people, and I just have so much gratitude for the opportunity to just talk to the locals who've opened up to us. You know, in Tithamahara, we're walking around a lake, and these local guys are just sitting there watching a bird, and they said, oh, hey, look right over there, the crocodile. And said, hey, you know, stay here till 6:30 because the bats are going to pass over here. And there's like thousands of bats that come here every night around 6:30. It's the season for it. And so we waited and we watched, and it was just amazing. And other locals we met on the train, locals we met sitting down having tea, the guy at the juice stand today who told us about how he fought for the army and told us his story a little bit. I'm really appreciative of the locals who have taken the time to talk to us.
Yep.
So.
Yeah, it's a great country, great local people.
Food that's gonna make you sweat. Spicy
yeah,
food.
It's a lot of spicy food. Hot weather.
Yeah.
Quite cheap. I haven't quite done all the math yet for spending, but I think it's gonna work out for me at least for the whole time here, about $22 a day average. Mm-hmm. And that includes doing these safaris and
yeah,
a couple expensive things.
Yeah.
So pretty cheap to travel here. And I've never felt in any kind of danger or anything. It's very safe. We haven't gotten sick.
No, the fruits are amazing. Papayas and watermelons and bananas everywhere. Unfortunately, the mangoes aren't in season yet. We're really excited for the mango season to come, but I'm learning to like papaya. I've never really liked it. It's always kind of had that musky melon flavor for me, but putting some cinnamon on it really helps with the yogurt. Up in the hill country, there are several dairy farms. They've got a lot of cows and water buffalo here, so there is reasonably priced yogurt and cheese here, so that's kind of nice. Food in general has been really good. Yeah
overall it's definitely among our favorites of this trip, and probably one of my favorite countries of all. It's right up there at least.
All right,
so come to Sri Lanka.
Special thanks to my wife, Katie, for that great discussion about Sri Lanka, and thank you for listening. For more information about some of the stuff we talked about, as usual, you can go to my website, 1000daysbetween.com. That's the number 1000daysbetween.com. Thanks once again, and I'll catch you next time.